agriculture and how that changed the relationship between men and women. I find that fascinating.
Well, that's why you would read Thompson. He does a lot of that, a lot of historical information of that phase. It's a key thing. And the patriarchal archaeologists won't acknowledge that there were matriarchal societies. Now, what's interesting is I talked to the Evergreens about this stuff. Now, the Evergreens like Thompson. They said the Time Falling Bodies Take the Light is a really good book. But they said that it wasn't, if the women were in charge, and I don't know if they said the women were in charge of the matriarchy, but to the degree they were in various societies, they were fucking vicious, she said. The women.
So their kid would become the next leader of the matriarchy. In other words, what men are portrayed to do, mean assholes competing, killing each other for power, women did the same thing, according to the Evergreens. If they were given the opportunity, they would, you know, sabotage each other. But then I once asked Ion about that, and he said, no, there was no matriarchy. He implied that it was always men slightly in domination. But that needs to be asked more about that. And but Ion wouldn't even go as far as the Evergreen saying that there were women-dominated matriarchal systems. So Thompson may be wrong, or the people he cites. But it doesn't matter. It's a good thought pattern about how the matriarchy, and you got this the great mother goddess, there's no denying those icons that were worshipped, and then how that shifts. Definitely the priests took over, the warrior priests, and women started to just be second home. But not like the 50s. Well, private, a lot of things. What?
Yeah, the transformation to private property, from like right. nomadism to private property, was when women really got locked out, separated out of the tribe, so to speak.
Well, they at the first phase, when they stayed back at the camp and started planting stuff, because they had the herbal knowledge, the plant knowledge, and growing things, that gave them the edge. That was the early agricultural phase. So their settlements, where they could run the show at the settlement while the men roamed around hunting, that backfired when they got to bigger storage grain, bigger warehouse storages. Then the simple women gathering and, you know, collecting things was not big enough. They had to bring in a bureaucracy, and that's when you got the priests and the warrior guys coming in with the bigger, expanded granaries. I think that's what Thompson said.
Mm-hmm.
So the
and then
technology
all
expanded.
The world through
it. Yeah, so the technology expanded naturally, and therefore had to move out of the agricultural into what Thompson calls the civilizational. And you start having cities, city-states. Bigger towns, and then they become cities. I don't see anything. I don't know if it's that fascinating, unless you haven't thought about it. It's just logical. You know, I don't see anything surprising about it. But maybe it's because I've read Thompson for years. So you've never heard that idea before?
No. I've read Inc. And he talks a lot about the transformation from agriculture to nomadism. And
who did you read?
Private property and Ingalls.
Oh, yeah, that's the other guy that Thompson cites. He cites Engels, a particular book or essay. Yeah, so, yeah, Engels apparently wrote on that point.
Yeah,
Marx,
yeah.
Buddy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, Barry Nevitt used to be Chucky Marx and Freddie Engels. The two guys in 1970 stirred up a lot of shit. Freddie Engels and Chucky Marx.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So now, but what to understand is the moving to propertylessness. That's what McClellan predicted in the 50s. You see more and more people being nomadic and not staying with, you know, anchored in property. And that's what blew everybody away by the 90s when Wired magazine, looking for someone predicting the 90s, they saw McClellan did it, the new nomadism. And now we have a strange thing where you can be a nomad digitally, but not have to move. But you can have access to everybody on the planet. That's a new kind of nomadism. So that's the images we got to work with. We got to imagine and think about the effect of the nomadic, plus you have your car, so you can drive. You still get your chemical body transportation. But while you're in your car doing the nomadic chemical body thing, you're listening and experiencing or even talking to Ion in the car while driving along. We've had Evan do that. And that's a discarnate. That's a static, non-chemical body movement, but is mind movement. Mind movement. Carol just said, discarnate. Here come the garbage guys or UPS, and they drive by with all their noise. Hear that? That monster.
Yeah.
Look, it's closer and closer. Peaks, drowns everything out, and goes away. That's the famous Doppler effect, right? We all know about the Doppler effect. You don't hear people citing that very much. So, what were you just saying? The discarnate effect, the non-car effect, says Dr. D. My colleague in Integral Tantra Yoga. Now, this is good stuff. You like this, Jermaine, right? This is good stuff, right?
Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, you know, for historical, archaeological, non-mainstream ideas and imagery and facts, Thompson's pretty good. And so there's more to say. So the modern, many women and men working at work, right? And working together. And they're doing projects and they're inspired by it. They're having this tantra concert relationship. They don't have to have a sexual act or something, but there's a lot of sharing going on. And now this TV show I just finished watching, this Danish show called Borgen, B-O-R-G-E-N, about a woman who's a prime minister, and then she quits or gets fired, loses, and then supposedly she works for a corporation around the world for a couple of years, and she comes back to Denmark and starts getting back into politics because she doesn't like what's happening. One of the scenes, subplots, is the news director starts having an affair with the camera woman or whatever she does, directs something. And you can see they're excited about their TV life and they're doing and being creative, and then they're drawn to each other physically. So that leads to, according to the story, leads to problems. But that's an example, a new drama for men and women is outlet of creativity, but not the mental industrial phase of suppressed sexuality and kind of abstract yoga. You now have an involved yoga where you the mentor muse relationship actually is moves into other technological body experiences, like producing TV shows.
You know, Bob, I was remembering, I have a friend who works as a technical writer, and she works for a large corporation that does cell phones, etc. But she runs her group, and she always has 12 so that they can write these manuals so that people can read them and understand and take care of their own issues technically. But she told me once that she has to be very careful on her balance between male and female on the group and the ages, because she goes, it works like a harmony. If you get the right balance there and male to female, and then the ages, they work together and they bring each other up and they can get far more done. And she goes, if you don't get that creative balance, like too many men or too many women, she goes, there's a fight of positioning going on. And I always remembered that because I thought that as an HR person, that was a difficult task, you know, to find that harmony with those people and bring that many together, because she had a very difficult job, what she was doing. But she did amazing work, you know, taking extremely technical information and putting it into little booklets that people could, you know, on their own, figure out their own issues and problems.
Yeah, you just said HR, human resources. Did you say that's what you do or that's what she is doing?
Well, that's what she acted as, even though she was a technical writer.
Right.
And she ended up having to go into HR and learn some of that because otherwise her group didn't work. She spent years having some groups fight and how to get rid of some and bring others in. And it was interesting that when she finally got it together, she said, this is how I got my balance. And she went ahead and did like a third, you know, a third of young, a third of old, a third of male, female, and a couple of people that were homosexual. And she goes, it actually worked beautifully because there's a
tension.
So
she had
there.
To have every type. You're saying she had to have every type
yeah.
to get a balance.
She had every type, and it worked better because the creativity went higher. And they were able to communicate on more levels because they did that.
Right. So let's reread this last bit in light of that. Integral Tantra revisits but does not repeat magical Tantra with the sacred kiss in which the saliva and breath are lightly exchanged as the tongues touch. On the scientific side, the saliva contains pheromones and these trigger oxytocin or oxytocin production and reduce the stress hormone of cortisol and can affect the neurotransmitters in the brain to create a feeling of joy and well-being. Rather than experiencing the tears of sadness of the dejected Renaissance lover with a mental tantra of frustration and sublimation, here the tears can be of joy. Integral Tantra also revisits but does not repeat magical tantra's etheric emphasis on the body fluids of semen and fluid by focusing on the vital prana of the exchange of breath of the couple facing one another seated in siddhasana rather than the coital yab-yum yogi posture. So instead of enjoying sexually, they're just looking at each other. This shift from liquid to gas and the biospheric interpenetration of each partner with the other through pranayama expresses an emblematic and sacramental refinement of the magical into the integral and lays down a path of further coordination and integration of the higher subtle bodies of the tantric consorts. Such coordination or cultural collaboration, or in the case of Sri Aurobindo and the mother, the creation of their ashram in Auroville. And it has a picture of the architecture they made. So that's a key point. They express itself in creative projects of artistic or cultural collaboration. Now, that's expand that into the workforce today, what you're just describing, Kim.
Yeah, it's exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, there was something deeper movement between the people, but it had to be done in such a balanced way that not one group felt that they were alienated or couldn't voice their opinion. Or whatever they were doing didn't matter.
Now, here's what's interesting. I understand in school, at least in the Canadian schooling system, people have told me that the kids are trained. If there's an argument, they get everybody there always making up. Always, like an ongoing encounter group. If there's some problem between one kid and another kid, they get together and everybody supports either side or both sides. You know, there's all this negotiating, juggling the feelings of people. And then you get the old-fashioned people who don't have that. They're not used to expressing their feelings to people. This is the individualist, rugged individual kind of guy. That's the old angry white man, angry white guy syndrome. They're not used to bringing feelings into the juggling of social interaction, but you got people interacting socially so much in their jobs, it can be seen as an extreme bias the other way, so that your friend has to be aware of everybody's feelings and organize it. I would ask Ian, are people, if they take the Ionic point of not having any feelings, not being bothered by people, what kind of person is an Ionot? Is he a shit disturber in the group? Could what I am saying not apply? Or does Ian mean what your friend's doing and has a different way to talk about it? See, that's something that should be talked about. How much does one be independent and not caring about what people think? Or how about Ian saying your feelings you're not affected by people's feelings? That's not the case in your friend's situation. Everybody's feeling has to be acknowledged.
Oh, she didn't like it. She didn't like it at all. But it was, you know, one of those large corporations. You know, if I said the name, everybody knows it, what it is. And they had so much trouble that their policy changed to that. And they, in fact, didn't hire people anymore. Everybody is put through a temporary agency so that they can run people through within a three-month period if they aren't working out and on the team, almost like a beehive. Everybody's in the hive. If you don't work well in the hive, you're out. And that was her. She worked there for so long, she saw the corporation go from about 250 employees to over 10,000. And so she had quite, you know, they had quite a mess on their hands trying to get all these cultures and people together and work together in the atmosphere. And this is how they decided to do it. And she struggled with that.
Right. So you've got, and McCool brings in the point that the technology forces people to live and deal with these issues in the beehive. McCool said it was a big deal that put the coffee, to have a coffee break, whenever that was, in the 30s or whatever, to put the coffee break in, demanded workers to be social. And he quotes from the 19th century worker employee manuals where nobody's allowed to talk to anybody, ever. No talking. So we went from a no talking, you know, with like a Scrooge kind of Charles Dickens boss, into where people had a coffee machine, and then they would stand around the coffee machine and start talking. It was a radical thing. And then you have this beehive thing, which is even more radical, you know, 50 years later, getting into the 90s. The technology demands people to change. And you see young people, they don't know how to form identities in all these potential environments they're going to be forced to work in. So all values are thrown out. Like this thing about cooperation on an artistic project, that's like an archetype of individual achievement. This is all minor compared to what you're describing, Kim. You know what I mean? It's like a whole new way of being a human being.
Well, you know, one of my children went to a school here, a high school called High Tech High, and Bill Gates, it was his model. And Jacob Irwin from Qualcomm, his model for how kids should be educated and work together. And that entire premise was a beehive. There were notebooks. Everything was done on either the blackboard or computer, and everything was done as group projects. So in order to get your grade, you never did an individual paper or project, right. It was a group project. And if one piece of your group wasn't working, because each piece was assigned something to make the whole work, the rest of the group had to come in and lift that person up to get that grade up, you know, for them to pass the, and it drove my daughter absolutely up the wall. And after a year and a half, she says, I can't do this anymore. She goes, why should I work so hard? And others aren't working at all, and they know we're going to come in and help them in order to get this passed.
Right.
And I thought that's equivalent to the workplace, you know, a great deal, because you get into a group or whatever it is, and you'll have some that work their tail off and others that don't do anything, and they all get paid the same.
Right. So you can see that, you know, McCoon said that America was the most communist society in the 50s on the hardware level, uniformity of products, uniformity of lifestyle. All that uniformity. Then he said software communism was going to be a more decentralized group mind, but still much group mind. It is no mystery then that young, like if you, I think it was JW was even saying this, a guy like communist Bernie Sanders doing his communist thing back in the 60s, 70s, 80s, it would be ridiculous. But you've got a whole society of millennials and older who live in a mental communistic herd, hive mind. No wonder Bernie sounds like sense. You know what I mean? Makes sense to them.
Well,
it's all about everybody help together. Everybody should be on guaranteed income kind of stuff, you know?
Well, on that note, you know, I told you about my son watching the debate. Remember that?
Right. And well, he likes Trump. He likes watching Trump's interactiveness.
They like to see it. So he was wearing a T-shirt about a couple weeks ago. He came in. And it said, Make America Great Again. It's Trump's T-shirt.
Right.
So we were talking yesterday, and I asked him something. He goes, well, I don't wear that T-shirt out anymore. And I said, well, why not? And he says, because people were coming up off the street and telling me I was a racist and a bigot and yelling at my face in the grocery store line. And he was like, it's dangerous to wear that shirt out in public. And I was like, and I, you know, when I thought about it, I haven't seen one Trump sign or one bumper sticker. And he goes, well, no, you don't put that on your car if you don't want a key. You know, he goes, people are super aggressive about this. And I said, okay, so what are they doing where you work? Now, he works highly professional. He goes, no one is talking about politics. That's how far it went down. After they realized that Trump would probably be the candidate, it's like a lot of people support him, but everybody's afraid to say that they do because they don't want to be labeled something. And I, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like what I am saying, that Trump will win almost like in a landslide, but there'll be lots of riots and things leading up to it, but there'll be a lot of people going to vote for him for those and keep a secret. And
that's exactly
people.
What he said. He says everyone's keeping their opinion secret right now. And I said, did you see that before in the last two elections? He said, no. Everybody was freely talking about whoever it was they supported. And he goes, I have never seen this. Yeah.
Right. So what you've got, we can look at, this is quadrophenia, which means you've got the tribalism of the radio era, the paranoia of the radio era. You've got the schizophrenia of the TV era. The hysteria of the Thompson computer era, and then the satellite era is panic. All these things are happening even more extremely now. You got more paranoia than ever before, more hysteria, more reaction to this and that. So all the emotions on my chart are going through increased Baroque spirals, and nobody predicted that. Well, my chart did, you know, you could say, but I map it out, but nobody predicted that the elections would get this new mood. But that's because it's gotten more complicated in Web 2.0. So many factors are involved in people's quadrophenic lives. I mean, that's crazy that people are hiding. That's like retrieving Soviet bureaucracy, the image of Russian USSR, you know, tyranny. But people are doing it for the one-fifth of themselves, their chemical body. They're not going to tell the chemical body what their chip body is thinking. What it's going to do. More
that's,
support
that's
of my scenario. You should tell, telling your son my stuff, the five bias things, see if he can put his head around it.
I have broached the subject with them, and I get a very blank look.
Well, that's because they can't receive chemical body information. These kids are texting digitally. They can do all kinds of scanning because it doesn't mean you have to stop and make a position. You just keep drinking it. Well, you present your chemical body, and then you should say, now, okay, Billy, whatever his name is, one-fifth of you is going to be addressed by one-fifth of me. Well, what's one-fifth of you? My chemical body. Then you might ask about why, but you explain, well, it's only one-fifth of me, and I'm going to address one-fifth of you. Start talking like that to your kids. They'll fucking get mad at you. Then they'll fucking react. If you're normal, they can just clam up and be quiet. That's normal, but. Got to start. Everybody's got to turn into a radical probe of each other. That's what you have to do nowadays. You like that, Jermaine?
Yeah, I do. You know, I was thinking that makes me just kind of. I've been observing how sensitive people are. You can't. They get offended by anything on social media, and they take things real personal. So it's you have to, in a way, people. Just say whatever they want and what's on their mind, but then in another way, people get so offended and sensitive. So
there's a lot of thinking going on when people text. We read some of that stuff where the kids think about what they're going to say because it's real important what they're going to present of themselves, and they have to think of all these other factors.
I just saw something really dumb. There's this girl, she's supposedly a reality star, something celebrity, and she has a lot of followers on her social media, and some girl, one of her followers or somebody, went and commented on her page and
said something about her go and take care of your kids instead of being all over the place and pictures on social media or something, or said you don't feed your kids, you don't take care of your kids. So this girl, the celebrity, replies to her and said and tells her something. So all the fans or followers of the celebrity start going on the girl that commented on her feed. And they found out through her pictures and going through her whole page where she worked at. So they called her job and got this girl fired from her hospital job.
Holy fuck.
So this girl's now going back to the celebrities page and saying, I'm going to sue you if you don't tell your followers to stop harassing me and I lost my job. So I'm going to sue you because now I have no job.
Now, this is where Lewis's quote, and I want to end with this, but I got to go to the beast. We are one quarter fascist, one quarter communist, one quarter Marxist, one quarter anarchist, well, five, and one quarter monarchist. That's what we fucking are, every one of us. You've got mind, George Orwell didn't even fucking predict this. This mass, little mini group, mini nano community goes after and nails someone else, and the kids doing it don't even realize how stupid they are being, how unfair they're being. That's fucking unbelievable. No, it's believable. Totally believable and understandable, if you understand me.
Yeah, it's interesting. My son,
that's a good story. Google. That's a good story, Kim. What she's laying out, I guess it goes on all the time.
It's perfect because you wear a shirt and they verbally come up and say a few words. You put it on the digital social media.
You see why I don't say a fucking word and I don't say hi to anybody? Oh, I do attack little kids, but that's important. They're the coming people. You can influence them. But I do not engage. Carol said some guy said somebody, well, Bob in the pool. Is there a Bob? And they said, well, yeah, I met him or I know him. He doesn't talk much. I keep laughing at it. The fucking guy knew it. Go to my timeline. We get 10,000 hours of talk in public. But the this is why, yeah, we don't want to be a friend to anybody anymore. They're too fucking volatile. Keep your social contacts to a mere minimum.
It's the truth. When listening to what Jermaine said, it's like, but it's okay when it's through the digital, where they can't come back to you until they do come back at you.
Yeah.
And they find you and they hunt you down. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, when I first went on the internet in 94, I went into the alt Slack subgenius and I said something. I don't know, I emailed somebody, and this fucking guy, he was a major aggressive subject. He said, I'm suing you. And I didn't know any of this, the world yet. I said, what the fuck? I just typed something. The guy's going to sue me? But I said, well, I guess you can't type certain things. You know, I didn't know what the rules were, but I realized later that guy had that down. That's what you do. When a newbie comes in and you decide to bug him, you just say you're going to sue him, and the newbie doesn't know what the rules are. And you act like you do know the rules. So they did that on me when I first went in that world.
Well, that's funny, Bob. That's actually a really funny story. You should tell that again on payday.
Why?
You didn't know the rules. I didn't know the rules.
I didn't know it. I went on the internet because Croker's C-Theory site started, and he was posting all this shit, all this new stuff that I want to keep up with, so I had to go on. What the hell happened there? What's that?
What was that?
Okay. Yeah. So I went on. My reason to go on the internet, I said, you got to have a name. You got a name, Carol? I said, yeah, you can use mine because I'm going to shift over to Physicians Online. So that's how I got purple at ingress.com. So I go on there just to download data. Like I would just print stuff off. That's what I did. My first 6 months on the internet I still was reading. You know what I mean? I was getting information. I certainly wasn't going to go join a chat line or anything, but I had a very literary response, right? I went on to download stuff and read it because I didn't like reading online. I couldn't stare at a computer for an hour because I wasn't using it very much at all. But Carol was already on, and she went on the chat line on Physicians Online, and within a couple of weeks, she said, fuck that, that's terrible. Everybody was yelling at each other, and she just saw there was no sensible, rational discussion. So Carol got into the chat line world and got out of it pretty quickly and never went back. And now she's not even allowed on Facebook. She got so many followers, she can't even get on.
By default, she gets it anyway.
Yeah, like, yeah. What? That's right. What the thing about Carolyn is she has a very high digital profile. You know, you put her name in, she's the top person. There's 10,000 blogs coming, you know, when you Google her. And she has all this, and then she does this summits, and she writes her own blog, but she does not interact at all on the internet. She just produces stuff. Never been on a forum. Yeah, I mean, like, think of it. She's an old-fashioned monologist or monad. No dialogue coming out of Dr. Dean. Though she spends all fucking day talking on emails with people, with clients. So, but no public. So we have to make a distinction. She does a lot of interacting privately, but no public interaction. You look on Duke, she's ISIS. ISIS made maybe one post in 7 years, 6 years.
It's just, yeah, but she's built her own kingdom without having to interact in that public space.
Right.
There's nothing good comes of that public space.
Well, so much non-good. I was not allowed to mention Carolyn on AltOnSlog ever. Of course, I would.
Why on earth did they have such a negative reaction to Carolyn, of all people?
Because she's connected to me.
Oh.
You have to look. It's all predicting what they want to have a cartoon Bob Dobbs, J.R. Bob Dobbs. To actually have the real guy show up, that upsets everything in the world. And they must have known that I was the guy because they went after me like that girl you were just citing with the celebrity. I went after me immediately and never let up. There's on AltSlack, there's four different purples. I'm called Purple. There's four different guys posting stuff saying, Carol's the stupidest fucking – I just realized my wife is the stupidest fucking person in the world. They're claiming that I'm saying that. They're making posts as if it's me saying that. I'm the only guy who's got four different people imitating me.
Boy, you are prolific at being the new art form all the time.
That's right. Whatever you think this new art form is, I'm doing it. I've done it.
Without even doing it. That's
the thing. It's like the guy in the Romeo section. What do you do? Says somebody else, that Bob guy. And, you know, I don't do anything. I just get a lot of smart people to do it for me. That's been my rule for decades.
It was a great show tonight. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, I didn't even change the universe. I just got Io to do it for me. I claimed I was changing the universe in the 90s, that I could or would or something. But then in the end, I popped out and got another. I got the guff to do it for me. That's a pretty good one, eh? I got the fucking universe to do it for me. We should end on that wonderful realization. I mean, you guys are lucky to hear this. No human gets to talk like I talk. They can back it up.
When I grow up, Bob.
Yeah, when I grow up, I want to talk like Bob, because Bob doesn't do anything. I just want to be able to talk like Bob, so I can sit around and entertain whole universes. Also, I want to be a good DJ. program for self-realization.
Oh my gosh, you really are the best DJ there ever has been. That there is, I'm not just saying that to be a Baba. I am truly mean that. I mean, your music selections are just phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it's interesting to analyze that. I'm going to do it now, but I think it's my encyclopedicness. I do know a lot of 20th century music, you know, and the technology allows me to play it so quickly. It's partly the technology, I think, the speed with which we can sample and build setup.
I had 4 hours at work today where I had just the archives from the last 2 weeks of music. And I hit one today and it was mostly jazz.
Yes.
But it was just so beautiful. It was like, oh my gosh, these are like pieces from the 20s and 30s, it sounds like. And, you know, it was just awesome. You know, it gave me a new appreciation for it. So.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Yeah, all of you should do what Kim does if you have time. Maybe you don't have her kind of job, but yeah, those archives are awesome. Like Carolyn, every now and then she'll say, geez, I'm listening to this thing you did about 3 weeks ago. I've listened to it 5 times today. Just listen to it over and over again. It's so good.
Oh, that's my very favorite right now is part one of your March 26, 2016. Oh my gosh,
yeah, okay.
That is, I must have listened to that at least 10 times. At least. It's
that's
the best.
Good.
Yeah.
Hear that, Jermaine? Are you doing that, Jermaine? No.
Yeah.
Jermaine.
Yeah. I listen to the archives a lot. Like anything that
music
I.
Music a lot?
Oh, the music? No.
Well, that's what we're talking about, Jermaine. Yes, you're listening to the verbal archives. I'm saying you need to listen to the music more. Maybe you're not a music consumer. We'll give you that. Are you, Jermaine, a music consumer? I think Jermaine got knocked off. Okay, so anyways, very good, Kim. I'm glad you're, see you get slack, you know. Do what Bob offers. You end up in ecstasy all the time.
Yeah, pretty much. I totally agree with that.
Right. So, Jermaine, did you just come in, Jermaine? No? Someone just came back in. Okay, well, a lot of people have left. Just the core of us now. So, we'll find out if Mateo taped this discussion. Otherwise, we're going to have to do it again.
Okay. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Because it's a great essay, but it's interesting where it doesn't get to the complexities of today. You can't even describe the lifestyle of these people you're talking about, Kim, and they're on celebrity things and attacking people and then having their own jobs and shutting up and not talking. The complexities people live today, got to use the four-body model just to begin.
It is complex. It is.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean, it's pretty
bad. Yeah, I hear from lots of friends from different people and the work environments they're in and how things work and are structured. And it's very, what is that word? One size fits all. You know,
yeah.
In order to keep the peace, we will not go out of these boundaries. And this is a boundary section you're not allowed to go into. So everybody stays within these boundaries, which is sports or movies or what's on TV.
Right.
Or maybe what you did for the weekend. But that you don't go out of those boundaries. And that keeps the peace. So we have to work together. We're not going to voice an opinion or anything. It's been interesting because
right,
no. I ask people. Yeah.
You ask people what? What's going on?
I ask friends how things go at work and what,
right.
You know, just different stuff. I just.
But you got an agenda now. You're spying on them. You ask
yes,
them to get data.
Spying. Yep, I am. I'm really probing everybody. I really
good.
Probe them, and they don't know that I probe them. I don't know what's going on. You know,
right.
I just think I'm really interested in their world and their life, and which I am somewhat. And it's more fun to hear how things are working outside of where I'm at. You know, I have my own world. And
right now,
you know,
the new drama, the new one, and one of the workplaces that have to deal with this is that the people refuse to be called a he, she, or it, dropping the pronouns. That's going on in the college world.
Now, see, I haven't seen that in corporate. You know, when
no,
I
that,
letters,
that's
dressing.
Too early. That's
yeah,
too young.
It's not definitely not filtered in yet.
Mm-hmm. Dropping the pronouns.
Who's that? Is that Jermaine or someone else?
Oh, yeah, I dropped out and then I called back and I thought I was muted. I was just repeating
right.
What you said.
Were you writing it down, making notes?
Yeah.
So there was we were addressing you when you dropped off. I wanted to mention, yeah, Jermaine, you need to listen to the music more, not just the archive
yeah.
Verbal stuff.
Maybe yeah, I'll do that. No, I do, but I listen mostly to just everything that's not the music. But because it's been 3 or 4 years that I'm not into music.
Right.
I don't know.
That's what I'd be interested to see if this would work. Try it. If you don't like it, okay. But it'd be interesting to see if my collage makes you want to listen to music again. That'd be a test, right, Kim? A good test.
Yeah, besides that, my mind loosens up so much that I can probe a pattern, you know, without any thought behind it. Does that make sense?
Are you in your 40s or 50s or 60s, Kim?
I'm in my 50s.
50s, so...
Right.
Is that Generation X?
I don't know.
Let's see, 1960. Yeah, no, the baby boomers end in 64. So, you're older, older Generation X, probably.
Yeah. But the one thing is, you know, with when you work or, like, when you're designing or drawing... I try listening to music, Jermaine. It releases my mind enough because sometimes I have to do, you know, complex things with numbers and different stuff. When I listen to the music, my work gets done twice as fast because my mind just goes away. It goes on autonomic, and I am amazed. You should see how much work I get done. I'm amazed. It used to take me 3 or 4 days to see what I can do in 2 days. That's no joke. I mean, I know there's the RNA drops,
make you appreciate all different kinds of music more. I think it makes you enjoy music more.
Mm-hmm. I like you and Rob said.
What, Jermaine?
Like, I like music that's instrumental or in more melody, because what happens to me is if it has words, I start listening to the words and then imagining it is, and then I get trapped in that. Not trapped, but then I start kind of listening to what they're saying. So I enjoy like melody-style music that's just strictly like melody or just the instruments and stuff like that. So that's kind of one of the reasons.
There's a lot of words. There's a lot of instruments.
But I'll try.
So, Kim, I play a lot of modern stuff that you don't recognize, right? Because you're not listening to the radio in general. It's all new to you every week.
Yep. Every week. You know, there's always something I haven't heard for a while, but for the most part, it's all new. All the genres.
Yeah, because you're too young for the R&B and doo-wop. Maybe you didn't listen to this and that. So, it's all new to you. And there's beautiful music made in each decade.
Oh, there is. That's what amazed me this past payday about the jazz. It was really diverse. And I do like jazz a lot, but I mean, this is exceptional.
Yeah, I did the first mashup of jazz. So you got to appreciate that.
Yeah, and you also taught me to appreciate rap.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, is Jack into rap, Jermaine? I imagine he is.
Yeah.
Most black guys are. So he knows a lot of it, right? He keeps up on it.
Yeah. I do too. I can't help but to know everything that's happening. Who are the new rappers, especially because of like him and my everybody that I'm around.
Yeah.
So I know, but maybe that's one of the reasons I'm like, oh, they just say the stupidest things, but the beats are catchy, and then it makes you dance. But I mean, with some of them, I can't even go through the whole song with what they're saying.
It's very interesting to watch the liking of it, because for most of it, it's fucking stupid, and for me. But it's like when I listen to Native American Indians, they go they do their Indian chanting music. So monotonous and boring. That's almost what the rappers are. They're updates of the American Indian doing the same kind of ridiculous declaring and beats. It's so no harmonies, no Motown, no nothing else in there. Though sometimes a rap guy comes along and puts that in there, and that's what I like. And I think Ion's pretty good at finding those guys, those samples of.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. rappers that are popular. Hey, Bob, you should listen to Drake. He's from Toronto, Canada, and his stuff is actually, like, good because he raps, but he sings.
Right.
He just talks a lot about girls, and, like, he seems like a hopeless romantic. He's always talking about girls. Remember we told you his last album was called The Stick in Toronto, reference to Canada, Toronto.
I know. I'll listen to that. But listen, you know that Brian Taylor or Mini Max or Ad Observer, different names. The guy who has all the synchronicities with me in Toronto, he pointed out, he knows this first, and Drake became big a couple of years ago. He said, Bob, you were in the Drake Hotel in 2004 in Toronto and did that thing with Glow and all this neat stuff in the Drake Hotel. And then you talk about the Hex adding a six, and this guy's coming out with six. He analyzed the content of Drake's world about two years ago and said, it's all Bob stuff. And then he's coming out of Toronto. So I certainly know of him, but I don't know much of his music.
Yeah. Yeah, he'd be interesting to listen to his music.
It just occurred to me that the mixture of the five bodies and that example of that girl suing the celebrity and all that happened to her, in this crazy mixture of human communication, xenochrony can happen. My xenochrony, where everything is mirroring me, can happen. It's such a hyper form of communication. Now, there's the art form, Kim, is noticing the xenochrony. So it might be happening to you, but you haven't got the wherewithal to see it yet. You probably have to have your own radio show first. You've got to be in the public.
But, you know, I can project you, Carolyn, and Ion on to, like, Drudge Report or anything.
Yeah.
I mean, within a week or two of a show, you'll see subjects that were, you know, broached on Payday. You know, you'll see these little mini headlines all over the place. So it's like,
that's the chaos butterfly. You can be in Web 2.0, you can be the chaos butterfly now. You can influence memes out there. And if you got Ion working for you, you're really going to be the top influencer, or Ion working with you. You know? That's how you could explain that.
Well, I don't remember what it was last week, but I went to BBC, and then I was on Drudge, and I was on something else, I think the Daily Bell or something. And I was like, oh my gosh, first of all, the headlines anymore, they're really not able to create a lot of news like they used to. But now it's getting into, like, if you have a show and there's a lot of sexual things on it, you will see that brought up in articles, one right after the other, you know, which you never saw before. And it was, you guys talked about the volcanoes 1 week, and then that was all over everything. Could this one blow? Is this one going to blow?